Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome back to the Female Gaze Podcast. Welcome back mostly to me and to Alana.
We're here together again.
It's been a minute.
It's been a while.
We've been traveling all over the world.
I know. But I feel like you had a longer stint than I did.
How long were you in Puerto Rico for?
2.5 weeks.
Yeah, so it's about the same.
Yeah. And I was living in Jessie's house while she was gone.
Mm-hmm. We did a cute little swap.
We did a little swap. Yeah. People, we're back. I'm so happy that we're back.
Yes. And joined by an awesome guest and pal, Sarah Ahmed. What's going on?
Hey.
Hi.
You also recently returned.
Yeah. I'm feeling good. Where were you in Puerto Rico?
Vieques. Have you been there before?
No, but I went to Culebra.
Culebra. Yeah. So my family lives on Vieques. So I was chilling.
Wow.
There. Yeah.
It was dang. Fun. Blue it was waters.
Really fun. Oh, hell yeah. That was the best part. The feeling that I have when I see the water for the first time, It's just like, oh, why don't I live here forever? It makes me want to retire on a Hawaiian commune.
So did you grow up there? What's the deal?
So my mom was in the army. So I actually grew up in Africa the first 6 years of my life. And then we moved to Thailand for 7 years after that. And we had a brief stint in Japan. And then I finished high school in Puerto Rico.
That's amazing. College, like, so. Those are all the places I want to go in my life.
Oh, my God. You have to. Start with Thailand because that's like, yeah.
What part of Africa?
I was in Kenya, Nairobi.
Oh, wow. So you were in like the place that people go.
Yeah. And my mom's whole thing, she was like, just because I'm in the army, like, I don't want you guys to live on a base. Like, we're going to live like normal people. So that's all I knew, right?
That's so interesting.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was really rad.
So how does everyone feel about being back in New York? Is it depressing or are we hanging?
Well, I'm really glad to be back in my bed. That's one thing I like.
I don't know.
And we should say you were just in London.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, London. Yeah. London and Bath. Yeah. I drank the water in Bath. It was gross.
Was it?
Yeah. But it's like mineral water and people go there or used to go there in medieval times because they thought, you know, like this water is going to cure me from some horrible disease like leprosy.
Uh-huh.
And it didn't. But, you know, the water eventually like you would get like meningitis from the water because it was like disgusting. Really yeah, they shut the water down several times in like recent history and cleaned it out.
And you drank it.
But I drank it, yeah. Mm-hmm. From this, like, spouting fish statue. It was really lovely. Like, it was so British.
Yeah. Do you have pics?
I do, yeah.
All right, later.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, cool. We'll have to share them on our Insta. I had a very New York moment walking here this morning. There was a man a block up standing in the middle of the intersection screaming, fuck the police, as a police officer was just staring at him with his very amused smile. So I was like, New York, great. And then I started hearing this, like, blues harmonica wafting down the street, and I thought it was someone's ringtone. And then I realized it was actually a man driving a car while playing blues harmonica.
Hell yeah.
He's cruising down Broadway.
That's why I love New York.
Yeah, I was like it's no okay to be back. I do love this shit. Yeah.
No one's ever fazed by anything that goes on. I do fucking love New York. And I'm an island girl, but when I come back here, I'm like, oh, yeah, this is what's up.
Yeah. Okay, so we have a lot to cover today because we have a lot to ask Sarah about. We have a lot to cover in the news and culture and do our boats and bees. Couple quick pieces of housekeeping, things I just want to mention real quick. First of all, I was asked twice in the past week if the name of our show, The Female Gaze, is a pun, which I thought was a very interesting question and wanted to address quickly. It's not a pun. First of all, I think it would have to be spelled differently to really be a pun.
Well, when I say it out loud, people are like, oh, because you're gay.
Right.
And I'm like, no.
Somebody asked me that when I said I was coming on this. Yeah. And I said, well, that's kind of good, too. That would be a good one.
Yeah. I mean, it. So I told them, I was like, it often is unintentionally a pun, I guess, because of who the hosts are and a lot of our guests are.
The female gays in the house.
That's right. Yeah, so
it works.
So
it works.
No, but sometimes. And then the other one is that, so on a recent episode, we were talking about Quentin Tarantino briefly and how we all felt that he has been a very good director of women, a writer of women's roles, and just gave a little shout out to Tarantino. Then we had a listener from London send us a message that I thought was interesting and a point well made, which was that Uma Thurman in the past year has come out with her stories of a lot of bad shit about
her. Like the car crash that she was in?
Yeah, right. So the New York Times wrote this big piece about Uma's horrible experiences with Harvey Weinstein, but a little bit about Tarantino too, and that when they were making Kill Bill, she was supposed to crash a car in a scene, and she told Quentin, I can't do this, like a stunt driver needs to do this,
right.
And he insisted that she do it herself, and it almost killed her. It was very bad. She couldn't even get out of the car on her own. And so this listener said, I think you just need to keep all of the facts in mind before you put someone on a pedestal like that.
Good on you, listener from London.
Yeah. Good job, I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
I think that it doesn't mean he hasn't written great roles for women. But yes, if we're going to sit here and extol his virtues, we should try to remember that. I honestly had not remembered that story when we were talking about him.
But. I know. And it's also hard sometimes because then it goes into the, you know, separating the art from the artist thing. And I think that's tough, especially now with the R. Kelly stuff happening, Chris Brown stuff happening. Before any of that, I am a fan of their music, right? Or was, rather. Mm-hmm. And it puts you in this weird place because you often forget that there's another side to it. But you're like, oh, my God, but your voice and your music or your art and whatever you're creating is so wonderful and magical.
Right.
And sometimes, you know, A, you forget and things like that. Obviously, you can't forget about art, what R. Kelly and Chris Brown are doing. But then it kind of puts you in an awkward position where you have to choose.
Yeah.
And I mean, I would choose the art. I would be against the artist every time just because I don't, you know.
Yeah, I don't think one person's life is ever worth losing for the sake of art. I mean, I feel like Hannah Gadsby made this point in Annette, right?
Yeah,
when she was
absolutely.
Talking about like all the painters who were sleeping with young girls.
Yep.
And she's like, we didn't really need, I forget who she was talking about, Picasso or someone. She's like, we didn't really need that. You know, I think like that 17-year-old girl's life was more important than that
absolutely.
Art. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. So let's move on then to
Toot Toot.
You jumped the gun.
Toot Toot. Feels so good.
You've been waiting.
I couldn't say it yesterday. I had to make other people do it.
Oh yeah? Okay. Yeah. We're gonna do a round of float your boat.
Toot toot.
And be in your bonnet.
Bless, bless, bitch.
Does anyone want to kick us off?
So to be honest with you, this week has been a little difficult. So my boat is not anything that I read because I haven't read anything. It's not anything that I've seen because I haven't had time to watch anything.
Okay.
But
so curious where
it's
this
is. No, it's a personal thing because it's great. I signed a lease. So I signed a lease. Well, I've been living. Backstory is I've been living on couch. I broke up with my girlfriend in October. And so I've been couch surfing and literally with my dog living in any place that I can get.
Oh,
so
man.
It's been, I know.
That's hard.
It's been tough. Yeah. And you know, you have your job, you have shit to do, and you have to keep your life going and also take care of a dog, but also be living on a million different couches. So for me, that was so fucking rad because I got to sign the lease and now I have a new place in February and that's my boat and I'm happy.
Good for
that's
you.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Making moves.
Have you ever signed a lease on your own?
No, this is the first.
Huge.
I know.
That's great.
That studio apartment.
I'm a little jealous. I've never lived alone.
Really?
And I don't think I will.
Yeah.
I mean, unless my girlfriend and I, you know, have some horrible split, which I hope that doesn't happen.
Wood. Yeah. Knock on wood. That's the worst part.
Lauren, we love you.
Yeah.
I hope that doesn't happen.
I don't know you, Lauren, but I love you too.
You love her when you meet her.
Yeah. I think just before moving in with a partner, just know who you're dealing with. I'm a U-Haul and lesbian.
I feel like I have to keep you from going down.
Oh my God. It took me 3 years.
Oh, see. That's how you're supposed to do it. That's how you're supposed to do it. All right, who's next?
I'm happy for you.
Thanks.
Sarah?
Okay. So mine is audiobooks.
Oh.
Because I've never listened to an audiobook before. and I just started listening to Educated. I'm already like most of the way through. Do you guys know this memoir?
So
Educated is written by this woman, Tara Westover, and she's probably in her early 30s. She wrote the book when she was like 28, 29. It's a memoir. She was raised as a survivalist Mormon in Idaho. So she was not schooled. Her father had some sort of bipolar, untreated. You know, he also was convinced that the Illuminati were running the states and the world, and that, you know, the second coming was near, the apocalypse was coming, you know. So she was raised in this really, really intense environment without socialization outside of her family. Wow. And she went to church, but she wasn't like a part of the church because her parents were the whole time being like, they're all Gentiles, they're all immodest, you know, the women. So it's really interesting, especially in terms of like this podcast, because it's entirely written from her perspective. And it's a story about abuse, about finding herself and her own voice in this like bizarre world, and educating herself slowly over time. Anyway, so I don't listen to music that much outside of my working hours unless I'm putting on a record. So it's because I listen to music all day. I'm working on music all day. So when I'm, you know, commuting or running or whatever I'm doing, I like to listen to podcasts or now an audiobook. Oh, my God.
So what got you into audiobooks?
Yeah.
Okay, so just because I'm like totally somebody who if somebody suggests something, I'll do it.
Yeah.
And like my
sister-in-law. That's so refreshing. Most people are like, oh, yeah, I'll check it out, and never do. So that's nice to know about you.
Yeah. And I'm in this book club at work where I suggested this book purely because somebody told me it was good. Yeah, and okay. I just was like, I believe you. I'm sure it's great. Like, I believe everybody immediately. And it was my sister-in-law. She was like, we read this audiobook. It was so good. My brother listened to it, too. And so I put it on. And, you know, first book is free. So fun.
Okay.
But also I was like interested in it from like a voice acting perspective because this woman is like reading everything and doing all the different voices. So like the dad's voice is like this. And I was finding it hilarious because I know that I do impressions of men all the time.
Yeah.
And I don't really know how ridiculous they sound. And now listening to this woman.
You have an idea.
I mean, she's doing a great job.
She's not the author reading.
No, it's okay. Like
that's what I was gonna
some
ask
sort
you.
Of actor. Yeah, I mean, I imagine it's really difficult to be good at voice acting and reading 8 hours of a book.
Yeah.
Or 10 hours.
You know, I went to a tour at the Audible offices a couple years ago, and it was so interesting because they showed me the booths where they record and that there's a little window so that the director can stand on the other side and like direct the voice actor. And I was just like, wow, I never actually thought about how that would require a director.
Yes.
Like anything.
Yeah,
I often direct myself. I do a lot of voice over acting, like just radio spots, mostly like iHeart commercials.
Yeah?
Out of necessity, if nobody's there, I do them.
Okay.
The hardest thing in the world is the like copy that you have to read at the very end. That's like, this thing is blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
It literally is. It will take me like 5 hours to get this down because you have to do it in like a 15-second window.
So I thought they sped it up.
Sometimes, but it becomes illegible and you can, if you warp natural voice sounds too much by like speeding up, you know, it starts to sound like digitized.
Crazy.
Yeah. And you can't understand it. So you pretty much have to do it full and then you can only speed it up just like a tiny bit. So the people that do that for real, I guess I do it for real, but it still feels fake. I'm a fraud.
Wait, will you just give context for people why you would have to do this during the day?
Yeah. So I am a composer, but also we're like, the company I work for does a lot of random stuff for everybody that's audio related. So I'm the in-house like woman. And I've been doing vocal stuff, primarily singing and writing the melodies and whatnot, since I started working there. I mean, I interned when I was like 20 at this company. It's called Jingle Punks. And I remember my first day, they were like, we need you to sound like Fergie. Can you do that? And I like sang a alternate version of Black Eyed Peas song, and I did a terrible job because I just sounded like, you know, little white girl from Pennsylvania. And but they just like kept needing somebody, and so I did more and more vocal stuff, and then I wanted to compose, and then now they're like, oh, and we're doing this thing where we need a voice actor and we don't have enough time, so read this, you're now supposed to sound like Cate Blanchett in Lord of the Rings. So I'd be like, the book of Malin, you know, like, it's really
but where
weird.
Does this stuff go?
Mostly iHeartRadio stations. So we have a partnership with iHeartRadio where they'll be like, this company needs a full radio ad and you're going to produce all of it. So do a Captain Crunch jingle and do the like, next week, like in all stores near you, you know, stuff like that. Yeah. So
you really have to be changing your voice a lot, mm-hmm. right? Because you can't be, obviously, you know, every people who are listening can't just be like, hey, that's the same chick that I heard over and over. So you're mm-hmm. really training your vocal cords. It's kind of incredible.
And I've also done, you know, for library work, when you're trying to get your stuff placed in a lot of different shows, like let's say HBO has a login to our library. They'll listen to one record that's made entirely by me, but it's in the style of Kacey Musgraves or Maren Morris. Mm. And then they'll go and listen to like an Ellie Goulding style thing that's like a fake artist name that I made up, Festival featuring Eden. and they want variety, so I have to literally sound like a different person, and the music has to be, you know, completely different. So obviously we hire other people to make, because I can't like sing like Aretha Franklin or something, you know.
Right.
Although I have been asked to, and I'm like, this is problematic, and I don't know why we're doing this.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think Aretha Franklin could have sang like you, so just saying. Different strokes.
Exactly, different strokes.
Let's just knock her down a peg. Yeah. She's...
You know, we did a segment on Aretha, and I felt like we were too nice to her. So,
so you're just going to
walk that one back.
Oh,
no, just kidding.
That's funny.
Yeah, no, that's so interesting. This is like your whole Clark Kent life to me. It's actually so funny because I knew you as an artist and was following you on social media before I met you. And
really?
Then and then I met you at a party at our friend Coco's
just
house.
Joe Goldberg'd her.
What does
that
mean?
Have you not been watching You on Netflix?
Oh, yes.
Oh, is that the one with them? With
that
what's
was almost
going
to be my B.
Penn Badgley.
That was going to be your B?
Yeah.
We need to talk about that. I really liked that show.
I enjoy it. I don't want to talk about it.
Go.
anyway, yes, I was following you then. Yeah. I met you at Coco, who designed our artwork. Shout out again, Coco. And you were telling me all about your day job. And I was like, oh, that's so interesting. Someone who does all of this is like really fascinating. Still didn't put it together. And I think Coco put us on an email together once, like some mass email.
Yeah.
And I like was looking to see who else she had sent it to. And I saw your name on it. And I was like, oh, wait a minute. Is that who I was talking to at that party? That's
Tomboy.
I know who that is. That's funny. Anyway.
You're a creep.
It wasn't intentional. I didn't go to the party.
I know,
how dare
Jessie.
You?
I'm no Penn Badgley.
I'm pretty sure I walked past Penn Badgley the other day.
Yeah.
And
I
shouldn't say walked. I was running to the train. And I didn't stop. I just kept running.
Sorry, Penn.
People, I mean, I wanted to stop and like be cool and walk by him, like saunter, you know, like I don't have to get to the, I'm not late. Like I don't run to the train, but I run to the train every day.
100%.
I run everywhere I go because I'm always late.
Yeah. Do you know who he's married to?
No. Yeah, the sister of all the other sisters.
Yeah, Domino Kirk, one of the Kirk sisters, who's also a very good artist, singer. Okay. My boat. Are we still on boats? Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I actually want to talk about something that I witnessed when I was in Ireland, which I thought was amazing. So I was in Limerick, Ireland, and I was at a pub one night with my friends. And, you know, last year, Ireland voted to repeal an amendment in their constitution which banned abortion.
Yep.
So I excuse myself to the restroom at one point and was in the stall peeing and noticed that there was tons of graffiti in the stall, which I always think is fun to read. And I was curious to know like what the Irish lasses were scribbling about. And I noticed quickly that it was almost entirely about the abortion amendment.
Holy
and God. That there was this entire dialogue that women had been having on the bathroom stalls about
Whoa.
It
oh
for and against repealing it. And so I wrote down some of the I like took a bunch of pictures just to read you a few.
Wow.
Repeal for women whose lives are at risk who may be leaving their other children motherless. And then someone else wrote, just because it's happening is not a reason to legalize abortion. And then voting no will not stop abortion in Ireland. It will prevent safe abortion. This one was heavy. Repeal for the women who are forced by law to carry babies that they know have no chance at life to full term. Women who have to plan their baby's funeral, not christening.
Whoa.
And then someone responded to that. I carried a baby which died but would not abort. So it was really like
wow.
both sides.
I'm getting like chills.
I was just looking at my
arm.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
God saves hashtag bitches, which that one confuses me a little. Repeal the eighth for our girls, hashtag trust women. And, you know, they would often like point arrows at someone's thing and write their response, or they'd write a heart around something that they liked. So then my friend Kay, who was with me, was curious if this was like still something people were talking about.
Yeah.
So she went into the bathroom with a pen and she wrote her own message on the wall. She said, men who try to tell us what to do with our bodies can go straight to hell. How can they even imagine what we go through? And then an hour later, I went into the bathroom and someone had already written a giant heart around her message and someone else had scribbled fuck yes below it. So this is like an active conversation.
Yeah.
So cool, right?
It's incredible. And also, I don't know, it almost makes me sad that sad. It's for happy that the conversation is happening, but sad that it's in such a
sure.
a space like that. That's where they're feeling safe. To express themselves.
That's
without
what I was
fear.
Wondering if it's if it's reflective that there is this public conversation happening, or if it was like this is a safe place for us
I don't know
to only
much,
speak to each other about this.
Yeah, I don't know much about, you know, what goes on in Ireland in terms of like free speech and how people, you know, think about abortion and all these different topics, but that was possibly the safest, potentially one of the safest places that they could have an open dialogue with fellow women without the fit, you know.
So it's funny because I came back to the table and I was feeling so overwhelmed and emotional about this, and I was telling my friend who's from Limerick about it, and she was like, ugh, those brats are always writing on the bathroom walls. Like totally unemotional
like
about it's just like annoying graffiti in her hometown. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting thinking about Ireland because of, you know, Catholicism and the relationship to abortion.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure it's just so embedded in the culture that, you know, it should be illegal. And I mean, as much as it's probably a testament to the fact that they don't feel comfortable talking about it to each other out in the world, it starts somewhere. It starts on the wall in the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you are validated and somebody's actively writing on something that you wrote on, then you feel a little bit more strength. You put it down into, you know, so at least that is happening. And do you know, I actually feel a little bad that I don't know, did they repeal it or what?
Yeah. 66.4% to 33.6%. There was also one quote that I took a picture of that I thought was cool. Someone said, in response to someone who had written something pro-choice, they said, I disapprove of what you say, but will defend to the death your right to say it. On a fucking bathroom wall. So good for you, Irish ladies.
Good for you.
Yeah, that's cool.
Amazing. Yeah.
That's cool.
I really love
we
that.
Need more of that right
Absolutely.
Now in the States.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's my boat.
Next time
that's
you're
cool.
In a...
That's like a nice emotional boat.
I really liked that boat. I think next time you're out at a bar, you should write something on a wall and see what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just don't feel like we're that earnest about bathroom wall writings in the States.
We'll see.
It depends.
Like,
it depends. If you write something about Trump, you know, maybe.
Yeah, that's true.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Time for Be In Your Bonnet now.
Buzz, buzz.
What do you got?
Be In My Bonnet. You know what's been pissing me off actually this entire week? Because all I've been doing, actually pissing me off for a while because I'm doing so much commuting from different locations and I'm taking so many different lines and subways, is fucking subway etiquette. Pisses me off when people don't have proper subway etiquette. This morning I was on the RW and it was pretty packed, but there was one person who had two hands on the pole. two hands like this. And everyone was trying. I literally went to go take a piece. And I was looking at him and I was like, bro, you're not going to take off one of your hands so that I can put my hand in. And I just stared at him and literally he didn't budge. And so I had to be like, can you move your hand? Because there's so many people on this train right now. Mm-hmm. And he was like, oh, sorry, I didn't realize.
Right.
Well, what do you mean?
That's privilege.
Or the people
that
sit with their legs open. That pisses me off. I'm like, can I sit next to you? Or it's like all of a sudden you just walk into the subway and everyone just forgets how to be a human.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like sitting on you, sneezing on you.
I hate people who walk on while you're walking off.
Yeah.
Ooh, that really
gets me. That is the cardinal number one rule.
Yes, that really grinds my giblets for sure.
Or when you're like waiting outside, you're being patient. People are walking up and you have someone that just comes and steamrolls you and pushes in front of you to get on while you were waiting because you're being nice.
Yeah, and when I'm like particularly saucy, I'll be like, getting off. You fucking, I love it. I love it.
Yeah, it's a good one.
That's my B.
All right, Sarah, what's your B?
Okay, so I thought about this. I have like one tiny little bee that I need to shout out because it's like my biggest winter pet peeve, static electricity. I hate it. I can't touch anything without zapping it. Like even my cat and I will like give a little smooch and then we zap each other. I'm like, nope, that's it. Get out of here. Don't look at me.
I hate you.
Yeah, I hate. Okay, so that's just one tiny little bee.
That's relatable.
And then my other bee is coming back to New York and waiting in the bathroom line, the women's bathroom. So while I was in London, I went to several places that had two bathrooms. One was for women or women identifying.
Uh-huh.
And then one was for gender neutral.
Mm.
Please and thank you to whoever came up with that idea.
Mm-hmm.
Because men can go in and just piss real fast, walk out. First of all, they don't have like their period situation to deal with. If they have to take a dump or whatever, fine. But there's only one in like, you know, the line that has to do that.
Yeah.
and then women are going in with their babies, with their periods.
Mm-hmm.
And not to mention that we need a safe space for women identifying, femme, you know, whatever spectrum people. So having like a women's only bathroom and then a gender neutral, it makes it so much more safe for, first of all, for trans masculine identifying people. So they don't feel like they have to deal with the only male thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And for people like me who feel completely fine going into a men's bathroom, especially if there's nobody in there.
Right.
And you know, taking a piss and not like standing in line with the rest of the ladies, worrying about going in the men's room.
Totally.
It
makes sense.
Yeah. It's just, it's driving me bananas.
Yeah.
And I can't, I'm just so over it. Mm-hmm. Plus,
yeah.
People always like out of the corner of the eye, you know, see me and they're like, oh, the men's, oh, never mind. They like misgender me and think that I'm going to the men's bathroom.
Also, like, mind your own fucking business. You're in your own line. Let me be in the line that I want to be in.
Yeah,
don't come tell me where I'm going. I know where I'm going.
Yeah, it's just, there's like, we have this weird etiquette about like, trying to help people and by assuming who they are. And every time somebody misgenders me, they apologize profusely, which just makes it worse.
Yeah.
Like first of all, you don't know how I identify just based on how I look.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't know.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then we don't need to have this conversation. You can say like, oh, this is open if you want to use it or something. But bathroom, I'm just like, so stressed about it.
Yeah. I also noticed when I was in several airports the past week that it occurred to me for the first time that it's a little strange that there are only baby changing tables in women's bathrooms.
It's fucked up.
Yeah.
What if you're a single dad?
Right.
Yes. Where do you go?
I'm kind of shocked that it's legal.
And what if you have like a little girl and she's like 4?
Right. Yeah.
She's not going to go into the bathroom by herself.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, it's bizarre.
It's really weird.
Yeah. I mean, this is just shit that's going to take a long time to change.
Yeah.
You know? It's like we're just starting to understand these things and then to actually see it work out in the way we construct buildings and just like react to people in the moment. It's,
what is the option for dads who need to change their babies outside? Like what do they do? I don't know.
On the seat at the gate?
I guess.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll have to ask.
We should ask.
I don't know right very in, many listeners. Single dads.
Yeah, any single dads listen to this female only,
I hope so.
The only one coming to mind is Ben Affleck in that movie.
Ha! I was thinking about like in real life.
No,
Jersey Girl.
Jersey Girl. That's the only one. That's the only single dad I know, and totally. It's not even real.
It's not even real. Single dads, where are you at?
Oh my God.
Listen to the female gays. What's
those
up, Jess?
Hunky widowers.
Yeah. With the babes. What's pissing you off, sis?
Okay. There's one that is, I'm reading this amazing book called Ninth Street Women by Mary Gabriel, which is about modern artists, women artists in the like 30s to 60s in New York. Mm-hmm. So it's been teaching me a lot about artists like Lee Krasner, who is Jackson Pollock's partner, but also an amazing artist in her own right.
Yeah, who overshadowed completely by her husband.
100%. Yes, and partially by her own choice that she decided that, this is kind of society, their best shot was to put all of their eggs in his basket to promote him. And so she kind of like held back a little
That's
bit.
It's kind of a bummer.
It's a bummer. Her heart is amazing. So anyway, I was at the Tate Modern last week and
same.
I saw both of their paintings in the same room. Okay. So it was interesting because the Pollock that they have hanging in there looks a lot like a Krasner painting.
Yeah.
And the same Krasner painting in that same room and the plaque by Pollock's painting.
I thought the same thing.
Is like, you know, he had become famous for his splatter and blah, blah, blah style. But then he was worried he was hitting a wall. So he decided to try to experiment with figures more.
Which is what?
It's just like it's less splatter and it's more shapes.
Right.
Then you look at Lee Krasner's painting, which is shapes and was always her style from the beginning. And it's like, oh, I wonder where he just magically got this idea. It fucking makes me crazy.
That's
now.
Dumb.
Yeah, it's really annoying.
That's but also, it's kind of interesting because inevitably, whoever you're partnered with, you will be influenced by each other
sure.
in
Absolutely.
Your personal life and your art.
Yeah.
I mean, that happens to me all the time.
I actually wanted to ask you about that.
Yeah.
Your partner is a visual artist.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I'd be very curious to know how that affects your music.
Oh, that's a really interesting thought. So one of the reasons why we went to Tate is because of Lauren.
Uh-huh.
But also, I love going to museums because I love understanding the intent. There's so much intent behind visual art.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much like that's being discussed in one thing. You can make a pop song and not have any intent other than getting people to, you know, dance and enjoy mm-hmm. themselves, which is totally fine. And it in, I think, music, there's more of an obvious cross between art music and commercial music, right? Mm-hmm. So in design, commercial design versus fine art, there can be a huge divide. You can, you know, it's not quite like artists who are fine artists are making commercial stuff, but are considered fine artists. You know
right.
what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So there are musicians who are considered like art musicians, but they're making like commercial music, you know, like St. Vincent or something, right? So I find it really interesting and I like bringing in a lot like of intent to my music.
Mm.
And Lauren's art is so arduous and so all-consuming. She spends 500 hours on a piece. She is extremely detailed. Her body aches. It's about a living thing that she's making, and it talks about all of these like this obsessiveness for detail in her work. And so I kind of love that her body and her process adds pain and joy and stuff into her actual art. And I think about that a lot in terms of what I'm doing. It definitely affects it.
Yeah.
For sure.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Mm. Yeah. It's
how can it not?
Yeah.
Yeah. I also saw an exhibit at the Barbican in London that was all about how artist couplings had affected each other, which was very interesting. And they would show two artists work side by side and explain mm-hmm. their whole romantic history
then
to kind of extrapolate how you think that affected their work. Yeah.
I think it's also interesting because we end up getting gifts for each other that are really related to the things that we're interested in our art.
Mm-hmm.
So I think early on in our relationship, I bought her a skeleton of a quail. Because it would be Explain. Something she would look at. Yes, she like cried when I got it for her because she was like, you understand
oh,
me.
Yeah.
It's the best. But because she wants to look at real biological design. And she wants to look at things that inspire her art that are fascinating figures and combinations. And, you know, she likes looking at things that are perfect spirals because of geometry and fucking biology is just insane, right? So
that makes sense to me. I've seen her art in your home, actually. Yeah. And you can see the skeleton of her art.
Yeah.
You know, like I think I saw a piece that wasn't finished. And you can, I mean, it makes sense to me.
It's like fleshy and intestinal and bony and...
Right.
And micro orgasmic.
Oh,
it's like micro-dosing, but for orgasms.
Just like tiny orgasms, yes. All the little content.
I wish.
Awesome. Yeah.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Okay, cool. So... let's talk about your music now.
Cool.
Tomboy.
Hey. Yeah.
New album coming out the week that we're posting this episode.
Oh, sick.
Yeah.
Nice timing.
Yes. You let us have a little sneak preview.
Yeah.
And it's fucking awesome.
It is. It really is.
So it's your first full-length album,
yeah,
right? You had the EP out a few years ago, but this is your first full work.
Under this project,
okay.
Yeah.
What was before that?
Well, when I was 18, I made a record called... Vertical Lines by Sarah Aumann. It's really bad, but you know, but I did it then.
Yeah.
You know, it's where I was then.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say it's entirely bad because I need to give myself a little credit, but mostly bad. And then, I made a record. It was more of a larger EP with a band called Half Sister.
Okay.
And they were some of the people that worked on the Sarah Aumann record with me. And that was just what I was doing in college. I had started as a film student. At Syracuse.
Uh-huh.
I went to Syracuse.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah.
What year did you graduate?
2013.
She's baby.
I was 2012.
Really?
Bitch.
Were you in Newhouse?
Yeah,
dog. Me too.
Yeah. I was a TRF major.
I was a BDJ.
Oh, wow.
Broadcast, yeah.
That also, I love that acronym.
I know.
BDJ.
Well, because it used to be BJ major, broadcast journalism, and then it was like, oh, blowjob. So they were like broadcast and digital journalism.
There you go.
Yeah.
Saved
well,
it.
That's also so cool. Digital. Yeah,
I'm
yeah.
going there this weekend.
Oh, wow. I haven't been back. And I like don't really want to go
no,
back.
I haven't been back since I graduated.
No
I'm
shade
so
to Syracuse. I just,
it's
you know, I've moved on.
I know. I'll let you know how it is.
Yeah, that's so interesting. So I started, and when I was there, you know, there's this massive music management program.
Yes.
And I was playing guitar in high school, and I got to college, and I guess I was playing guitar out in the dorm because I wanted to be cool and I wanted people to like me, and like some music management majors were like, I'll be your manager, and I like had written 3 songs that were terrible and could play like 2 covers, and they booked me a show, and that's when I started doing things. And then the music program was interested in me because I was making music, and so they encouraged me to get a music minor. So I went out and I auditioned for like the music industry minor that was artist, like musician style. So it was the music industry minor 2. So you could take theory classes and lessons. And I was like the only girl taking guitar lessons at the time. Mm-hmm. And I was not a major, so it was not very good. So I'd do these recitals with like all these metalhead guys.
Yeah.
They would do like these insane pieces, and I would do like a duet with the professor.
Wow.
So bad. And yeah, so because of that, I had a lot of access to the studios there. And then I just sort of fell in love with with the process. You know, I was obsessed with film because I love storytelling and performance. And I had always been obsessed with soundtracks, and you know, ever since I can remember, I was buying soundtracks from FYE, For Your Entertainment, at the mall. Of course. You know, Romeo plus Juliet. I found out about David Bowie via Moulin Rouge.
Wow.
I had no, I mean, I had listened to Rebel Rebel like a thousand times on the radio, but I'd never gone out and listened to Diamond Dogs or anything. You know, Hunky Dory, I had a little bit of exposure to that, but it was through Moulin Rouge when I was like 12 that I heard of David Bowie and really found him. So yeah, then at school I was making records with people, and it became my focus. I had a professor, Tula Guenca, who was like an editing professor.
I know exactly who you're talking about.
She was amazing. She was an editor for Do the Right Thing.
This
Indian woman who was like the only non-black person working on that. So she actually had to drive the reels through the Rodney King riots because nobody else could, because she was the only non-black person. Can you believe that?
That's insane.
Wow.
She had the reels of, I think it was Do the Right Thing, and maybe mistaken, maybe it was Malcolm X, I'm not sure. But yeah, anyway, she's, shout out to her because she was a good professor, and she was like, I think you should focus on music. By the end, the last year, I was writing music for friends' films. And that's how I started doing it. But at that time, I didn't really know anything about it. When I'd go to see the screenings, I'd be like, please let the music be loud enough. I don't know if I did it right. Is it going to clip and like burst the, the, you know, I just was kind of doing it by chance.
But where were you as a vocalist at that point?
Well, I was, I never really considered myself a vocalist until later on in life. My sister was this amazing vocalist. And my dad is a wonderful vocalist. He's also a professional, semi-professional trombone player. So I grew up with a lot of music in the house. But I was always like the sporty, like tomboy, that played soccer and wasn't very good at singing. Or at least I didn't have the confidence my sister had. I didn't have the practice. I was never asked to be a part of like the things that she was asked to, which I think is interesting. But also, it gave me time to really modify my voice according to who I was listening to. So at the time when I was younger, I stole my brother's Bjork CD, his Radiohead CD. I had some, you know, like I said, the soundtracks that I bought. Obviously, I had like Ricky Martin and bullshit like that too. Alicia Keys, you know, all my good records. And I stole my mom's Carole King album, her Enya album. So I was singing along to these things, and it was modifying my voice in a way that my sister's was going more choral. I was singing like Bjork at age 11, you know? So then I started writing music in high school because I had this, like, this is so funny. I had this boyfriend who, in sophomore year of high school, who wrote songs, and he wrote a song for me. And I just thought, oh, I could do that. I want to do that. I can do it. He's doing it. I want to do it. So
did you break up with him? Because you're like, I've learned what I need to from you. Goodbye.
Goodbye now, sir.
I think he's living a wonderful life right now. I hope he is. We don't need to go into that.
Okay.
No, I was just very gay, so, you know, it wasn't going to work out.
Right.
That affects it.
Yeah. But I did love, my brother was taking guitar lessons in college at the time, and so he would come and bring me back sheets of like tablature, so that I could learn different chords. And every time I learned a new chord, I would like write a song with it. And when I was a kid, I took piano lessons, and I always wrote like little songs. And when I came home from school, if nobody was home, I would sing like a full 8-minute overture, just making it up by myself, walking around the house. And that's what I like wanted to do when I was alone. And I do it now on the streets of Brooklyn with people just staring at me because, you know, you're not, you're not alone. Alone here. But I still write music while walking around.
Okay.
I do a lot of that. But anyway, am I going into too much detail?
No,
that was amazing.
Where was I going with this? What were you asking? Oh, singing.
Yeah.
So I did performance, like I was in musicals, but I wasn't like a dancer. I was more of like an actor, right? And my voice was kind of the weaker link, but I could do it. And then because I was writing these songs, I was writing music for the voice I had at the time. So I would write in the key that I could sing in well. And so while I couldn't necessarily sing Star Spangled Banner very well, I could do it. I didn't have the confidence in it that I had in the stuff that I was writing. So while I was writing stuff for my voice, I started getting more confident in my voice. And then it was early on that I started working at Jingle Punks, where I was actively being asked to modify my voice and sing in things that I wasn't comfortable singing. So I had to just get better at it. And it was also like, I need you to learn this part, or I need you to write something, sing it, and have it be done in an hour. So, so you have to just push through, and if you do that a few times a week, your voice gets a lot better. And at that time, I had already been sort of working on my voice, stretching my voice. I would go on long car rides to Syracuse in college and listen to Lauryn Hill or Fiona Apple and really try and sing with them those lower registers, just stretch it out, you know, like just really go into it. And then I would listen to a Joanna Newsom record, sing with her, and she's going from one octave to like three octaves above that, right? And just following along and doing my best to hold on with them. And that was like my own sort of education on it.
Okay. But you are such a powerhouse vocally. So I want to know when that really kicked in. Like, I would love to ask someone with synesthesia what they see when they hear you singing.
Oh,
because to me, it's like a beacon of light, like from a lighthouse. Yeah. Like, I almost have it when I hear you sing, you know? So when did that, did you find that?
Yeah, I think that that came more in my adulthood. Not that, it's not that separate from when I was really heavily, and I still am really heavily in involved in group therapy and therapy work. I, like I said, I am somebody that will do anything that somebody suggests to me. I also
is this Coco's suggestion of a therapist?
No, but yeah.
Everyone goes to Coco's therapist. Thought maybe
no,
you
but
did too. Okay.
But you know, I started when I was 22. I had gotten into a bike accident and had like PTSD, and and I was, you know, I grew up pretty Christian, so I had severe anxiety around being gay, and for like a decade, it took me a long time to even say the words, you know, in my diary entries. I don't want to look at ever because I say it instead of gayness, and I was so afraid of being gay. I would like rather have cancer than be gay. So even just admitting that I was afraid of it, not even that I was actually gay, was, it took me years. You know, I started at age 11, right? Oh, and so I started this therapy work because of the accident, but it was really, really necessary to deal with the trauma from my childhood, dealing with that secret, holding on to that, like, fear my whole life, right? And nobody thought that I had this fear because I was such a happy-go-lucky type kid. I kept it really, really close. I didn't talk about it more than like five times that whole time, right? Anyway, so I think when I started doing this work and when I started Tomboy and in junction with singing all the time at work, I found that I didn't want to be a cute, frivolous singer. I wanted to be powerful. I wanted to have my own voice, my own things to say. I didn't want, people had always, you know, qualified my music as cute, and I felt like that was so not my identity. I didn't want to be cute, and I didn't want cuteness to feel belittling. I wanted it to feel like a choice when I did it, right? So I started pushing into my chest voice higher and writing things that were kind of a little bit out of my range, but going for it. And just shouting. There's this wonderful Bjork performance on Jules Holland and Hyper Ballad. It's a fantastic song. It's Tom York's favorite song. Her voice cracks several times when she goes for this high note, right? And I find this flawed performance to be so engaging because she's so vulnerable. She's going for something that she doesn't know she can make, and she doesn't make it, right? She falters, but she finds the note eventually, and there's just something so human and so powerful in being able to expose yourself and not be perfect. And so I wanted to stretch and go for those things, and it felt really related to what I was working on in my therapy, right?
Yeah.
And that's
it also relates to what you're saying about Lauren's work and just that idea, like seeing the organic material in the art.
Yeah, so I think that's when it started. And when I first did the EP, our first Tomboy one, I hadn't quite found that yet. I found it mostly in performance, in stage, singing with people. And it gives me a lot of joy. I find a lot of release. And I feel like so, like I've just screamed at the world. And I feel released. I used to do that when I was a kid. So actually, one of the songs on the record, Zephyr, is kind of like a story about that, where I would go running in any sort of weather because I was a soccer player. I'd go for runs like a good girl. But I'd be listening to music and I would just stand in this field and like scream because that's where I could emote, you know, in a safe way. And that's how it feels when I'm singing at the top of my lungs and on a on stage, you know?
How intentionally personal is your songwriting?
Extremely intentionally personal.
Okay.
Yeah. I would like to experiment more in my in Tomboy and in anything that I do. I'm gonna probably do Ament at some point. But I'd like to experiment taking on narratives that are less personal. But I think for anything to feel really truthful for me, it has to come from a personal place. And it feels hard and false if I don't. So, you know, it has to be really personal. And everything is like, everything that I write is kind of from either a memory or an imagined memory or a expanded upon situation that existed or something that I created while I was in the actual memory, like an idea of what the world was like. So for instance, Submarine from the record, that is a song about, it's inspired by this film from the 60s where a man goes like inside of a body and he's like in a little submarine. It's also Mrs. Frizzle, the
from Magic School Bus.
Magic School Bus, where I think there was like a redheaded boy who like sneezes and like the Magic School Bus gets small and like it goes up into his nose.
That's my favorite episode.
So it goes up into his nose, and I just was imagining myself as a tiny version going inside of my body, trying to find this other version of myself or another partner or something. And it's like this journey inside of myself where I'm like choking on my own like blood and stuff, swimming through it, trying to to feel whole, trying to find myself.
So Submarine has the lyric, one makes a number, but two makes a pair, right? Which I fucking love because that reminds me of like my favorite Broadway song of all time, which is Sondheim's Being Alive.
Oh, cool.
And the song, or the there's a line in that song which is, alone is alone, not alive, right? And that's what Submarine reminds me of.
Yeah, I think I've always felt like a person that does well in pairs. I'm very close to my sister, always was. And I also, you know, have a partner now. But also I see myself as kind of split into different places a lot. So it's not just about the relationships that I have with other people that make me feel alive. It's that on one level, and also on another level, you know, my desire to marry myself with myself, and to feel like less alone with myself. So, yeah.
And the song Seed. Is that particularly about queer love?
Yeah. So that song is about many, many, many different relationships, or I made up relationships in my mind. Uh-huh. The first one that I talk about in the first verse is like my freshman year in college. I wasn't gay at the time. Well, I mean, obviously I was, but I wasn't like out even to myself. Mm-hmm. And there was this girl in my archaeology class, my dissertation. I was like convinced that she was a lesbo. Like I was so convinced. She was so cute and had dreads, which at the time I'm like, oh my gosh, white dreads, I don't know. But I was like, she's definitely gay and she's staring at me all the time. And so I just kept being like, I was like obsessed with it. I was like, why is she staring at me? She must like me.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we'd pass like a gorilla jaw in the like archaeology dissertation. And like
fingertips
I thought,
of grace.
And I thought that like she was lingering, you know, and that's like the first lyric, right?
Yeah.
But it turns out she was extremely straight, and I was making the whole thing up.
Like,
please tell me there's a
story. I need to know.
I was like, okay. So there was this guy at some party, and I remember being like, so they're like, she was not there maybe, but friends with him, and he was like, she's not gay, and you are going around telling everybody that she's gay, and like obviously you're the one that has like a thing for her. And I just was like shocked and upset and so embarrassed, but it was true.
Yeah,
I went home that winter break. I watched like the L Word for the first time. I watched 1,000 Tegan and Sarah videos. And I came back and I met this girl and she became my first girlfriend. And I remember like shaking when we had our first kiss. I was like so scared.
Yeah.
Because I was so terrified of it, but also I was so excited about it.
Yeah.
So seed is about planting an idea in your brain because you need it. And letting it grow and to this like almost unruly place so that you can like hack it back and understand where you exist in that world.
Wow.
And so for me, seed came from, we had this organ sample that my partner Will found and created. And it had this quality of like a pond. I felt like I was in a pond. I definitely, every time I hear music, elements of what we're creating, I'm taken to a place or an image. So in this, my image was like a lily pad on a pond.
Mm.
And then it sort of changed to like warm grass, wet in the summer. And then it became this like garden. So the lyrics were about this world that I was feeling from that place. And I wanted to, you know, talk about something that felt like intoxicating, like a warm garden does. And that's very much how I felt, or how I've felt about love and lust in the past. It's an escape mechanism that I've learned over time to kind of stop doing, where like new love was a distraction from issues I was having in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd just go from like one thing to the next. And I was wondering why I had like, you know, girlfriends in college where I was like lusting after all these other people while I was with them. And it was because it was a coping mechanism. It was a way for me to avoid reality.
Yeah.
So the song is about a lot of things for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. So, I just did want to shout out your partner, Will.
Yeah, Will.
Who is half McEntire. Of the duo. Yeah.
Yeah, he goes by William Shore. He's a lovely feminist man.
Yeah,
I love him. Yeah,
love those.
Yeah, I don't really have to do anything. His lovely partner of a long time. She's done a lot of good.
A lot of work.
Yeah.
With
actually,
him.
You props know, to you.
Not just that. I mean, obviously, he's done his own
sure,
work.
Yeah.
I want to give him fair credit,
absolutely.
I also think she's had a huge influence on him, which has been great. And he's got a wonderful mom, a wonderful sister.
Right.
He's got a twin. Yeah. He's an identical twin. So they have influenced each other a lot. Yeah.
Takes a village.
It does.
Yeah. And he's got an older brother and a you know, dad as well. So he's got, you know, a lot of life. He's a wonderful vibraphonist, though, and I love working with a percussionist because I'm not as rhythmically inclined.
Mm. Mm. Right. Cool.
So he fills out that, and he's a much better technical producer than I am, I think.
Okay.
Even though I'm getting to be a lot better at it.
Right. But it's probably nice not have to worry about all the things. Yeah, focus on your strengths.
Yeah, like we have sessions where we get together and we work on things, and then we'll both work on it separately.
Yeah.
And he might be, you know, refining the kick sound, the low end on the kick, or maybe he's not happy with the hi-hats, and so he's changing that. And I am writing lyrics or deciding where the next part should go or mm-hmm. something like that. And then we come together and we influence each other's choices and then we go separately again.
Cool. Yeah. So the album is called Steam. Mm-hmm. It's out February 8th.
Yeah.
Correct?
Yeah.
And you're having a little album release
yeah.
show party?
Show.
Show and party?
Yeah. it's going to be a party.
Every show is a party.
Hell yeah. When is it? Where
my mom's going to be there.
Hey.
Can't wait.
It's at Union Pool, right?
Yeah,
so
Union
if you're in
Pool.
Brooklyn, is it sold out yet?
I hope it's getting there.
Yeah,
I need to buy a ticket.
You need to come. Yeah.
I'm a Brooklyn girl now, so I'll see you there.
Oh, sweet. Yeah, so it's like at 8. We have Andrew Fox, a good friend of ours, who's opening the night. He's fantastic. Fucking amazing. So good. And then we have Liam Bensby. I hope I'm saying his last name correctly. He is just putting out new music. He was in a band called Strange Names. He's like this lovely queer boy that is on the scene. And then we're playing. So yeah, come. We'll probably be on at like 10-ish.
Yes. Cool. Yeah. And if you can't make it, the album will be out.
Yeah, and we're selling vinyl. We're going to have t-shirts.
Oh, yeah.
Check it out on Bandcamp because it all goes to the artist.
Amazing.
Nice. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Before we wrap up, we're going to force you to do a round of the hot takes wheel with us.
Ooh.
Okay?
Yeah, where is it?
It's fast by its very nature.
Right here.
You took it away from me.
You need to explain it in more depth to me.
Okay. Basically, it's a wheel that has various topics on it that have been mm-hmm. submitted by listeners. So I'm going to ask you to spin it, and
cool.
it's going to land on something. We'll read it, and yeah. then everyone goes around and gives their hot take on it.
Ooh, hot
yeah,
takes.
That's right. Okay. Give it a spin, and spin it hard.
That was kind of hard. It's in the middle.
Okay.
Let's spin it again.
Okay, give it one more spin.
Nah, that was good. Is chivalry dead and do we care? Chivalry is not dead if you're a lesbian,
that's
first
right.
of all.
That's so
I like being chivalrous to random ass strangers more so than like my girlfriend. Because I wanna be the person that like gets to stand and hold a door for somebody and make them feel good.
Agreed.
It doesn't have to be fucking romantic.
I completely agree. I love that kind
I
gesture.
Like platonic chivalry.
Yes.
100%.
Yes.
Okay, but...
And I hate it when a man's doing it to me.
Yes!
Well, this is the thing. I don't know if we can make chivalry in the sense gender neutral, because then we're kind of just talking about manners. I think this topic is asking about specifically men to women... Yes.
Okay, so I don't like
You know, now a lot of men are like, well, I would hold the door for you, but
me
I
too.
Know. I know you're a feminist, right? Yeah. Me too. Yeah. So
man. To my straight girl friends, I'm so sorry.
I know.
And my bi friends. Yeah, that's rough.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry. You know, I think that I don't have a lot of experience with it as a hetero woman, but I imagine that some women love it when their guy is being chivalrous to them because they like playing into gender tropes.
Like if a dude dropped a door on you,
uh-huh. yeah,
are
yeah.
you annoyed?
Yeah.
If anybody drops
sure.
a door
okay.
on me,
yeah.
I'm annoyed.
I was on a work trip last year, and one of our clients, he stands up every time a woman leaves the table, and I think it's really demeaning.
Yeah,
I don't know why, but that particular action, I was like, you don't need to stand. Like, what is?
It's not even useful. It's just
it's
like
not
a
useful.
Show
it's
of,
like the lady. Right. Exactly, it's a show of your masculinity, and like, let me stand up so the lady of the room
also.
May
it's
exit.
A show to be like, look, I am so good. I'm such a good guy.
But that's that's
like, fuck
those
you.
Men.
I don't need to clap and like give you a fucking pat on the back again for you already are patted on the back for being a good guy.
You're
all
doing
the time
it for yourself and for everyone else at the table, especially that particular action. I get annoyed when men don't hold the door open. Like, if there's a double door and there's a man who's already opening the door, the second one, usually I'll wait until the person comes through the first and I'll be at the second door. And if I'm, I don't even know how to explain it, but if I'm already after the first door, walking into the second, only because it's like, whatever, door is a door, but this particularly, like, you can wait an extra 2 minutes to be chivalrous, and or an extra 2 seconds. Sorry, not 2 minutes, that's a long time. But I'll always wait the extra couple of seconds just to make sure that the person, you know, doesn't have the door slammed on their face.
I think that you really nailed the head here, because you said, you know, chivalry versus manners, right?
So agreed.
So yeah, I think chivalry is
okay. Let me give one more example, which I think is actually interesting.
Okay, go ahead.
The idea of a man paying for things. Mm-hmm. So my first instinct has been fuck that, we don't have to do that anymore. But then I've been thinking, and I think I've heard other people make this point, it wasn't even my original idea. Men get paid more for everything that they do. So if a man wants to pick up a check, I don't know that women should feel bad about letting that happen.
Well, of course they shouldn't feel bad about letting it happen. It's more about what is the intent, you know? Right. Like,
well, yes, and that's a whole other thing, that often they are paying because they think then they're going to be rewarded later.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. Because,
it's tricky.
Yeah.
I love paying for someone because it feels like I'm getting to play a role that wasn't written for me.
I love it so much, too. Going on dates, I feel like I want to take care of you. And I want to do a role that usually people assume. If I went on a date as a hetero woman with a man, it would be like, I'm just the femmy lady and you pay for me and I don't like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You pay for me sometimes.
I do pay for you.
I think more so, I mean, obviously, I was going to say more so than the gay thing I didn't like. Yeah. But no, gay obviously was the thing that turned me off of men. But
if not for that.
But also, I hated being the woman in this situation. Mm-hmm. And it really confused my gender identity for a long time. Because I was like, how do I feel about my body? I feel fine about it, but I also feel really weird about all these other things that I'm supposed to be feeling fine about.
Yeah.
And I hated being like doted on. It felt wrong and felt not me and so weird. And I imagine so many women feel that way. But also maybe women like playing into, I know that my sister loves playing into gender stereotypes with her husband because they both kind of like fit them and it feels fun and good and like playful and sexy for them.
Yeah.
And I respect that.
Yeah.
But it does piss me off when a guy is playing the role and forcing me into the other role because I don't want to be forced into anything.
Agreed.
When you started dating women, did you immediately become comfortable in your gender role?
No.
Yeah.
I held on to those fucking gender roles and I thought one of us had to be the guy and one of us had to be the woman.
Right.
It took me so long to figure out that I could exist somewhere in between.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was
and then
so
it could
frustrating.
Any given day. Like it can be a fluctuating thing.
It was so hard for me.
Yeah.
And it, you know, that's really an upsetting thing to think about, that I, you know, I was in relationships where one, I would be the more dude and she would be more of the femme, and then it would change because I was like, am I that? I don't feel that. And then I would be like, okay, so in the next relationship I'm finding a girl who's gonna be more the dude and I'll be more the femme.
Yeah.
And then that felt wrong and it was like exhausting.
Yeah
It's so confusing.
Totally.
Because nobody explained to me that those rules are wrong.
Right.
and they don't, they're based on nothing.
Right. Yeah. You're dating across the spectrum.
They're based on sexual dimorphism, really, is what it is.
Absolutely.
And the reproductive process.
Right.
And they've gone so fucking far. And, you know, it's interesting deconstructing it when you're 25 and in a relationship that, like, your girlfriend's like, why are you playing into this role so hard right now?
I think it's fascinating to see on the other side someone looking at a relationship with, let's say, and assuming that because you look more femme, you're playing the more feminine role. So they are like, oh, but she's the dude, right? Or she probably wears briefs, right?
Yeah.
I'm like, so the way that we analyze within the relationship, I think it's also fascinating when other people outside assume that just because you present more masculine and more feminine, that you're automatically taking that dominant or passive role.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I loved learning about, like, what dominance could look like from a femme person.
Yes.
Because my girlfriend, for instance, she can be, like, an alpha.
Yeah.
And she also rocks, like, lipstick most
That's
days.
Me. Yeah.
And, you know, but she is, like, a dominating person, a leader.
Mm-hmm.
And it's helped me to understand that, you know, because I was raised with, like, pretty intense stereotypes, even though my parents weren't, like, the most stereotypical couple ever, it was not just
them.
It's
the world.
It was socialization. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
I think also in lesbian relationships, other lesbians can force you into those roles that you're
not used to.
Just from being someone who's similar to your partner, I hated when a more mask-presenting woman put me in a more passive role because I was like, I'm the alpha. I want to be the alpha in this relationship.
Yeah.
So the same way that hetero relationships function like that, don't pigeon me or put me in a hole just because I wear lipstick every day.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Amen. So amen. Side note, to bring it back to London, something I hate that they do in London, I notice, is that when men, like at a hotel, hold a door open for a woman, they thank you. Like, a man would open a door for me and say, thank you.
For
and I'd
what?
Be like, thank you? Constant confusion every
Are you thanking
time.
Me because you get to, like, be in the presence?
Yeah,
of, like,
I don't know.
Oh,
this is like
so
a British
weird.
Manners thing. I think that wasn't translating at all.
I had this really, this is a quick thing. I had this weird thing. I went to the Tower of London.
Uh-huh.
And they were doing very British style man humor from the Beefeaters on this tour.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, he was saying things like, ladies, you can go to the Crown Jewels after this. Like, don't, you know, he was being very gendered.
Yeah. Wow.
And it was driving me nuts. My girlfriend was like, just, like, enjoy it. Just, like, try not to let it get you too much.
You're
you
like,
know?
No, it's the principle.
Yeah, I mean, she, like, was just trying to have a good time.
Sure,
I totally
yeah.
understand.
Because you weren't going to change them.
But it was pissing me off.
Oh, yeah,
it was. It was making me livid. And one of the things that I've needed to sort of learn over the past year or so is that I don't need to let everything piss me off, because maybe that guy does understand that those stereotypes aren't right,
mm-hmm.
and he's not necessarily trying to perpetuate those stereotypes. Mm. He's trying to have a laugh. He's trying to get the crowd feeling good. And he's probably a man with a wife where they do play into some of these roles naturally.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He's a very masculine, like, military dude, ex-military guy, Beefeater. And, you know, maybe he does have a wife who's really interested in the jewels and couldn't give a fuck about the armor and the prison.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's the case. And I need to, like, for my own self-preservation, not get so pissed off all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah,
know,
that's
hard.
The daily task.
It's hard, right?
All right. Well, for stereotype breaking, empowering, emotional, in all the amazing ways, music. Check out Steam by Tomboy.
Yes.
Yeah. February
where can
8th.
We find you on social media?
So on Instagram, we're Tomboy. Oh, big thing to the listeners. Tomboy is spelled without the first O.
Right.
We didn't want to get into copyright law infringement. So
it also looks really cool.
Thanks. Also, I think it takes away from this, like, annoying Tomboys, like, on t-shirts.
Yeah.
At like H&M.
Yeah.
And I kind of hate that it's like, cool. You know, because for me, it was like a word that I kind of hated and kind of loved for so long. So it's like, you know, whatever. It means something completely different to me and Will, because we're kind of like rough and tumble with each other.
Yeah.
And it feels like a little tomboy, like, friend relationship. Mm-hmm. Playful and serious at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
But so it's no O. in the first half of the word, there is the O. In the second half, you can find us at on Instagram, Tomboy NYC, or I believe, or music. Ah, fuck. Fuck.
Check it.
You can find it on Facebook. Yeah, fact check it. Tomboy on Bandcamp. You can find us on Spotify. Add us to your playlists, you know.
It's Tomboy Music.
Tomboy Music. Okay, so most everything is Tomboy Music then.
Okay.
You know, it's funny because I've spent a zillion hours on these things. Like, it's like, where does that information go in my brain?
But you're searching for your own account, so.
Oh, I constantly am.
Oh,
I'm always
you?
Looking at my own account from my personal account.
Okay, then you have
and
no excuse.
Somehow, information goes in one eye and out the other. Anyway, so yeah.
Awesome.
Love
right.
that.
Sarah, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Guys, thanks for listening.
Find
also,
us.
Yeah, go on, do it.
Find us. Follow us at Female Gaze Pod on Twitter and Instagram. Keep sliding in the DMs. Keep talking to us. We love that shit. Thank you so much for being part of the conversation.
See you next week.
Bye.